Hello, it's Celeste on the Sales Edge podcast. I'm joined by Peter Wheeler. We were chatting off air and Peter said, hit that record button. We're talking about some juicy stuff as it relates to being an entrepreneur, selling, your tech stack, having mental breakdown.
You know, mental breakdowns are part of the job.
Yeah, definitely. Typically, I ask individuals two questions and we flow in and out of that. What's your sales edge? But I think out of all of my guests, you're about to drop some value. So, Peter, introduce yourself, a little bit about your background, what you're working on.
Well, I can talk about what I've worked on. That might be the easiest thing, because based on what you and I were talking about, that's going to be the more fun conversation, especially for if we're talking to salespeople and we're talking to entrepreneurial salespeople and we're talking to entrepreneurs or founders or people that aren't traditionally salespeople that need that element. I think that's going to be a lot more fun. So I am a serial entrepreneur, for lack of a better term. My first business I founded in 1998, drop shipping car stereo. I was in high school. Oh. I think I was old enough to drive. I think I had my license. I think I had my first car.
Okay, because I graduated in 97. And I do remember driving 30 miles to get a bomb car stereo in my Honda Accord.
There you go. So I can joke that I was a dot-commer. I really wasn't. But it was interesting having e-com, having drop shipping that early. I seem to always be ahead of the curve, and it always seems to bite me in the butt. Anyway, did that, got an automotive for a very long time, got into philately.
I'm sorry.
Just stamp collecting.
Can you repeat that one more time?
So being one of those jack of all trades, master of none, but often better than a master of one style scenarios. In high school, I had 2 to 3 full-time jobs. I had the side thing that I was doing for myself. I went and applied for a role at a place called Regency. It was right around the corner from my high school. And it was a philatelic auction house. So we're talking a place that would auction postage stamps to stamp collectors, like $3 million worth a year. By the time I left, we were doing $3 million a quarter, which was pretty cool. And when they hired me, they didn't realize I was a high schooler until I said, I can't start till 3:30. They put a team under me. You want to talk about super weird as being like not old enough to vote, but old enough to have that kind of responsibility. Weird world. At the same time, I was training to be a developer and doing developer work in continuing medical education and banker's training.
Okay.
So writing in Flash and ActionScript and Visual Basic. And thanks to Adobe 2021, I'm officially retired as a developer. So I don't even have to think about that channel anymore, other than I like doing DevRel work. But that was wild. Same time. We're talking overlap. Ended up offloading my car stereo stuff to another car stereo shop, stuck around there. It was one of those things that I'd pop in and I'd sell on the floor because I was bored or I needed extra cash. Did that quite often. And then you were noticing my license plate wall.
Plus you're right next to a fireplace that looks like you could have that going.
I am next to a fireplace. Yeah. This whole room's built out of Legos except for the fireplace wall. Giant Everblocks at this place called Everblock, and they're in Minnesota. American-made giant Legos to make rooms or pop-up displays for trade shows and events. So love of cars, big-time love of cars, was collecting them. And that was part of the reason I was working full-time so much across so many places. And ended up hated the developer work, left that role. They actually hated the company. And then the stamp place, they shipped me out to Los Angeles, Beverly Hills specifically, the ripe old age of 18 on my summer break senior year to do an M&A with a place called Superior Collectibles. We were expanding into sports collectibles in addition to the philately. So little old me got to live out of a hotel in Beverly Hills to do this acquisition, and it was hell on earth. So I left there as well. It was not my last M&A, but it was certainly my most unpleasant, and I walked away with a lot of great knowledge from it. Anyway, started doing some work with the shop that I was getting my cars repaired at and purchasing from. And they're like, hey, you know the internets. Why don't you become our eBay salesperson? You know how to write. You know how to do graphic design. You have all this stuff from before. Do eBay sales. Okay, cool. Came on, started doing that, walk in the park, started writing service, started doing all this kind of stuff, and eventually became the GM of the store. Opened two more stores, and then was legally able to drink. Yeah. So took it from a $3 million a year operation to a one repair store, two sales stores at $15 million a year. And they shuffled in the mid-2000s, and now it's just two repair stores. And we always knew that that's where the real money is. Sales is terrible, especially car sales. Now, that's another episode. So there, that's why my dealer plate's there. We're just going through the stack real quick.
No pun intended with the tech stack. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There we go. So I left there. Went to work for BMW, kind of. It was an indirect placement for launching their after sales and lifestyle in the region that I live in, St. Louis, basically building boutiques inside car dealerships and selling the wheel wax and the hats and golf bags and all those things, as well as performance parts. So I got to stay in my happy category. The majority of it was teaching salespeople how to sell trash and trinkets without busting the deal. Because we all know once something gets into finance, you're going to lose it. The joke that we have in the car industry is some people can afford the car. Most people can only afford the payment. And so you have to keep in alignment with how the payment works. That went awesome. I got to build cars. I got to be a YouTube influencer. I got checks from YouTube. We're talking 2007, 2008. Wow. And left that. Did some big work for Dolby. It's where Exceed comes from over there. I picked up the moniker Exceeder as well as Bespoke Gorilla. That's where Bespoke is there, doing work for agencies that sold jobs that they didn't know how to fulfill. Picked up some really cool clients of my own, Miller Coors. I continued with BMW. I continued with Mini Cooper. For Miller, I gave birth to a beer. 2012, invented a dinner series for an off-premise product. Mm-hmm. Which means you can only buy it at liquor stores or gas stations, bringing it into restaurants. And if you know Blue Moon, there's literally a Blue Moon tap handle everywhere. Every restaurant has a Blue Moon tap handle. That's what they're famous for. And it was innovative for two reasons. Number one, Tom Schlafly makes a joke about his business, but I was trying to start a religion in Mecca. St. Louis was the home base of this campaign, which is where AB was based. So that was the first uphill battle. Second uphill battle was dinner series like these were brand new. So I did a prefix thing, three courses, $30. Like it's normal now to hear that kind of thing. And it's a beer pairing. So I did a beer pairing. The restaurant got a wild card dish. They could do whatever they want. And the big differentiator, the thing that made it work, was I had a course where it was mandatory to use the beer as an ingredient. And the chefs loved it. And they'd come out and talk about it and they'd brag about the work that they're doing. The beer at the time was called Blue Moon Farmhouse Red Ale. That's a mouthful. Yeah. And it's a mouthful of a beer. It's now called Short Straw. There's nothing more cool than being leading on a project that brings something to life. I'm a father of two kids now, and I'm just as proud of my beer as I am of them. Anyway, launched a platform called Eat Local because I really liked working with those restaurants. Scaled that to a large RDS, restaurant delivery service. In that, I had a platform called DelAssist, which was where I managed the people ops, dispatch, and basically the whole back office for competitors of mine around the country, which also made M&A easy because I could understand markets, I could understand where to open. Granted, I had tons of non-competes, but the United States is pretty dang big. And it was also just offset payroll. So a lot of things on entrepreneurship, and you and I were talking about this before the show. It's like, how much can I offload to focus on what's important? How much can I subsidize somewhere else to make it worth it? So to provide great customer care, I needed a huge headcount, like 48 people doing our first year. We did $99,000 in business. And like, how do you balance that out? Well, debt is one of them. Subsidizing with your agency is another one of them. Thankfully, I had the cash to do that. But bringing on these customers, it became a profitable entity. I got paid to have staff. How cool is that? So anyway, ended up, we ran 35 markets across 28 businesses at that time. I opened seven more territories. Two of them were acquisitions. How old was I then? 30. Finally turned 30. Hospitalized myself as an entrepreneur. So this is kind of where we were getting into in our conversation. It's founder-led sales. I had sold 1,000 accounts for this business. 1,000 accounts in 2 years. Brought it to 2 million ARR and put myself in the hospital. Don't do that. Don't do that. I don't give advice often, but I'm telling my story, and my advice is don't do something that hospitalizes you.
Well, and I if I can interject here, I think, you know, it's not just the founders, it's not entrepreneurs. We see a lot of salespeople, any level in the organization, who are burnout, who quit with nothing else lined up. Like, it, there's only so much output you can have in the pressure of especially meeting numbers and growth year over year. It's a lot for individuals, especially if you're not set up to have outlets. It's a tough lesson, especially for younger individuals who are in sales, of that hustle bro culture of work, 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 work. And like you said, it can end up taking a serious toll on not only your mental health, but your physical health as well.
Fast, easy, cheap money. Coming from the car industry and having people, you know, having to go to those 7 a.m. Saturday sales meetings where you just watch Boiler Room or the Blake part of the Glengarry Glen Ross movie. It's not in the play nor the book. It's just in the movie. Anyway, yeah, it's the bro culture. That's just sales in general. It's fast money. No barrier to entry. And it's tough. It's real tough. And we'll, since this is a profanity show, just like mine, we'll get into the fucking biggest problem that comes from that in just a second. So
Had lived a full life by age 30.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Big time. We're not even talking about like nationally published works or anything like that. I'm trying to speed through this because you blocked half an hour, and my recordings usually are an hour and a half for a 60-minute show. Anyway, we're going to keep going. That sucker fell apart. Market influence is the term that I got taught about this. We were what was called a last mile service, which meant we did the tail end, all the work. And I'm still a big believer in that. If you can't do end to end, then you shouldn't really be doing it at all. And with that, we had a lot of organizations that we were a vendor for. You think like Grubhub, Yelp, Eat24, Easy Cater. There were a lot of them out there. We were in a pretty complicated and heavy space. There were a lot of players in the space. And what I went through was pretty simple. They decided to take on end to end, and they didn't need me anymore. And they needed their own salespeople in there. And entrepreneurs, especially if you're self-funded or trying to bootstrap or not chasing that VC money, you'll learn the lesson a big bank takes little bank. And by that, I mean, they were able to go into territories and say, oh, these guys charge you a commission. We'll make it zero if you go exclusively with us. There's no way to compete with that. It doesn't matter. Customer service. Like, you always want to make that argument. Like, where's the additional values? Customer service, this, 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 and this. You can't beat same thing you're doing now, but free.
Yeah.
Like, that's hard. That's hard. And we ended up just getting shaved and shaved and shaved on that. Now, granted, the personal relationships and those kind of things and loyalty and everything else kept momentum. But then credit card fraud kicked in. And I don't ever want to be in another exclusively consumer business, because those chargebacks are monster. If somebody does a chargeback on a $50 buy, let's say they bought $40 worth of stuff and a $10 tip for the driver, you got the 50 in. Driver gets their 10. So now you're down to 40. Let's say the restaurant has a 10% commission. So you give them 36, you got $4 left over. Chargeback comes in. It's a $50 penalty right off the bat. You're negative 46. And they take the full amount. So you're negative $96 on a $50 sale, on a $4 profit. Anyway, fiance of 5 years.
My husband deals with chargebacks on the daily. So that's a never-ending credit card fraud, disputes, issues, no chip and pin, yes chip and pin. Just
some organization's going to get real smart and figure out a way to underwrite and insure credit card transactions. That would be pretty cool. Also in that era, I was one of those people, and I have a PDF of the article. I can't seem to find it online anymore, but I was featured 2012 in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. My business was one of the first ones in the region, possibly in the country, that accepted cryptocurrency for services in general. And it was kind of a slog because there weren't the kind of automations that they have now and like integrations that exist now. And I had drivers that wanted to be paid exclusively in it. I really wonder where they're at now, because when I was getting it, it was about $3 a coin, $3. And I unloaded 125 of them, did this newspaper interview where I said, I don't trust it. It's unstable. It's not good for a small business owner. Granted, 5 years later, it did something, but we're talking, what, $450, $375 worth of coins. I got to sit on that forever. Anyway, hindsight, 2020, any lament, remorse. Fiance of 5 years said, I'm not marrying a 1099. I'm marrying a W-2. I don't blame her. Hadn't been a W-2 in forever. Forgot what it tasted like. And actually, I enjoy the flavor, the older I get especially. But with the company collapse, I started something called Accomplish Nothing. It's a double entendre. Yeah. Like for me, very accomplished, have nothing to show for it. And I was an accomplished nothing at that point. And so I buy these vanity plates to align to the work that I'm doing at the time. Now that one has no wear and tear on it. You see the rest of these are faded or they're discolored. Anyway, so I get back into tech. It's been 20 years off-ish, 2015 now. And get into geospatial, get hired on as a place as a field marketer, because that's where my joy was, experiential, disrupts, field, that kind of thing. And ended up becoming the interim head of marketing there for about 2 years within my first 2 months. And it was a senior IC role for this startup. And they ended up getting acquired, which was kind of neat. But I was able to establish a name for myself, did 8 product launches. Mm. 2 of them as professional services offerings and 2 of them as PLG offerings, which was really cool. And it was neat bringing that consumer focus. It was interesting bringing to a data as a service and a software as a service platform in PLG. But one of the biggest things that I was coming in there with was the ability as a salesperson to do marketing and to understand product. That's where I learned some of my biggest pet peeves. In the space, we used to sell what was called the geospatial journey. And that was because engineering was usually fucking around with some project that was important to them. It had nothing to do with the roadmap. And the salesperson, of course, needed to get 100% of the contract value. So we would go into these rooms. I was doing enablement, I was doing the trade show booths, I was doing all this stuff. We'd go in the room and they'd sell the journey. Yeah. Have you had to sell the journey? You sell 80% of the product for 100% of the price, and you make up this bullshit flow of like customized to you. We flow together. Now, knowing in the background that that's not happening because engineering's making whatever they want to make. I'm not attacking engineers. It just seems to be kind of a chronic thing. All the departments have some sort of chronic part problem. And that's why product hates engineering and marketing hates product and sales hates marketing. And there's no alpha predator in any kind of business. But anyway, Apex Predator. It was great. Great organization. Great learning these things.
Well, I usually ask people and you walked right into it. You know, what makes them unique? What is their sales edge? And to me, it sounds like it's this unique crossroads of understanding marketing and sales and being able to fit yourself into both of those roles, but then both see how it all can come together. And, you know, not many people are able to do that, but that 15 years, 20 years of putting in that foundation as an entrepreneur and pivoting and iterating forced you into that.
It's different when it's your money.
Totally.
It's different.
Totally. Right. I mean, I remember being a W-2 employee and some days you're like, oh, F, I don't want to do anything today. So I'm going to go there and I'm going to do nothing.
Well, that's one of my biggest pet peeves with my peers in marketing is that marketing always says, well, we're not accountable to sales. We're not accountable for conversions. Well, guess what? For the past 2 years at Okta, I was a quota carrying marketer. Mm-hmm. 10 quarters straight, 100% attainment or better for logos and revenue on PLG and on Enterprise. It's doable. We have to own it. This is why sales hates marketing, because it's like, I filled the top of the funnel for you. Well, here great. You don't understand, the funnel's a meat grinder. It's not actually a funnel, y'all. And there's no such thing as
middle of funnel. Is it broken? Like nothing is coming out.
Oh my God. And that's why end-to-end is so important. And oh yeah, just stick your hand in it. Please stick your hand in it. I dare you. The problem is, and this gets into the abuse of the young, the abuse of the money hungry, the abuse of the people that are aspiring. We start building these XDR teams. And it's not doing anyone any good. It's not. We teach them these wild and wacky frameworks and not the soft skills to have the conversation properly. We don't train them in how to sell. We train them in how to quiz. Yep. And a lot of times it's very offensive. You had mentioned BANT. Well, that's an easy one. What's your title? Are you able to, like, can you make this decision? Are you broke? How poor are you? Like, am I wasting my time having this conversation with you? You absolutely need what we've got. Like the end, we always answer for ourselves and we're always wrong. And then like, are you going to buy now? Are you going to buy now? Are you going to buy now? Like, who teaches this kind of thing? And the more letters we add, the more insults we add to the question flow. And then people are like, oh, our customers are our partners. No, that's what happens when you sell them a journey. You make them your partner because they're carrying the burden. You treat your customer like a customer with respect. You promise what you deliver and you give them value. Period. Done. Anyway.
That's awesome. So these poor kids. And it's interesting because I had a conversation with an individual contributor, huge, I mean, I call it huge, org, 500 people in sales. And we really dove into, hey, what's going on? What type of training did you receive? What's the enablement? What's a discovery look like for you? And they were saying, I can't fill up 15 minutes of a discovery. Okay, how does discovery go for you? What questions are you asking? And there they go with, what's your title? When are you looking to hire? How many people do you have? And then they run out of questions and then they're jumping right to the demo. We're not tracking win rates. It's all over the place. And it's every conversation that I'm having. And yet to see companies doing it well, yet everybody's out there touting, oh, we're doing so well, because it is that churn and burn, right? I worked with another individual who's just at their wit's end of all the company cares about is filling top of the funnel. They don't care about that customer journey or what happens, the conversations that we're having. It's just get them in, get them a demo, whatever, repeat.
That's why ABM getting back into style is interesting and neat to see. You're talking about churn and burn. We used to have something, and I guess they still do. I just haven't been in the industry a while. The car industry, especially on sales, called working the list. Same kind of abuse. We'd hire these kids. You know, they'd be coming from some sort of scam financial services company. You know, it'd be some sort of MLM. And I'm not going to name because we don't need to deal with that kind of feedback from those organizations, but we all know who they are, and they think they have it. They're looking at the fast money. They're looking at the great demo they can drive. They're looking at like this lifestyle that comes from it, not knowing how painful it is. And we'd work their list. So they'd come in, hey, you're not hitting quota. Hey, you're missing this. You're missing that. And we're talking end-to-end sales. Like when somebody shows up, they're yours. They're your up. Literally, that's what we call them. Ups. It's not just the old men sitting on a bench and they wander out when you're walking the lot and they start making you feel real intimidated. That's the obligation. That's what the role is. But these kids, you know, you'd threaten them, literally threaten their livelihood, what they're trying to pursue, the investment they've already made. So they'd bring their grandma in. Their grandma would buy a car. Next week, you're not hitting quota. And they'd bring their best friend's cousin in. They'd bring all these people they knew, their list. We wouldn't train them, wouldn't show them how to do it, wouldn't show them how to, we'd show them how to walk a deal, but we wouldn't show them how to like actually trade horses, burn gas, cross the curb, whatever term we want to use. And that those customers, once the person failed out, became the book of business of the dealership. And it was phrased in such a way that it was that person's fault. So there was no animosity held towards the dealership. And that book of business didn't go to the new hires. We don't ever give warm leads to new sales hires. We've never done that. You find me in an industry where that happens, I'll get back into sales right away. Seriously, and you're laughing, but like, when have you seen somebody that's fresh be mentored, supervised, get a warm lead from an existing customer on something simple like an expansion or a renewal? Like, why do we do these folks such a disservice to not teach them properly? And why do we do ourselves such a disservice? And it's greed. Okay, there we go.
Yeah. I mean, also, and, I think it comes from this place of, you know, this is America and you have to earn it. And like, we've put in the time and you need to earn your stripes and, you know, get time in the seat and really like hear those no's, and like it builds grit or calluses that makes you, you know, resentful probably.
Okay. So why are the people that buy computers based on how heavy they are making the decisions? How come we have folks that have never sold? Maybe they sold a fundraising round, and maybe they've sold themselves into a C-suite role, but they've never carried a bag. Yeah. They've never sat behind a windshield. They've never racked up the hotel and airline miles and the lack of time at home. They're setting metrics based off what their board, their investors, the street. Yeah. Oh, I'm hating that term right now. The streets.
I also used to see in the industry that I came from, though, it's like you said, you're in it, in the day-to-day. You're mm-hmm. seeing what's going on. You're so in tune to what's happening and the challenges that they're having and the conversations. So this individual I talked to the other day, this huge organization, said that they have never received in 2 years nobody has listened to a call that they've been on. They've never had any coaching on it. They have stopped recording their calls because why does it matter? And the industry that I came from, there was such a gap between everybody who was in let's call them the C-suite for lack of, I was like junior C-suite. I got to go to the meetings, but I wasn't in like the big meetings.
Oh, a seat at the kids' table.
Yeah, but I had like a seat at the adults' table, but then...
No, you sat at the kids' table, but you could hear what was going on at the adults' table.
And these people would talk about like, well, 20 years ago when I was there, well, this is how we used to do it. Newsflash, sitting now is done now, right? Like, the further you are away...
Yeah, spin the number on the phone, bud.
The further you are away from what is happening, it's really hard to make decisions for other people when you don't know.
Well, and it's a perspective problem, too. One of the things that I argue when I get into marketing leadership situations is... the value of anecdotal. You get into these marketers now and these organizations that lean into growth hackers and ninjas and wizards and whatever terms they want to make up, where it's like, okay, these are the reports. This is the net promoter score. This is my favorite spicy topic right now, is how many people are coming out that they hate net promoter scores and that they're useless, because they are. Nobody's listening. So Nikki Dibben, who's a phenomenal fractional marketing leader, she's like, when I establish budget for shows, trade shows. You know, salespeople always want to do trade shows. It's the hottest leads. They get the FaceTime, the blah, blah, blah. You know, decent T&E. Marketing never stands up and says, so what was the result? They look at it and they go, okay, it cost this much. We did these many lead scans. They don't even look at how the campaigns played out. They don't look at what the conversion was. They don't look at like the actual ROI. Yep. They just go, we had this volume come in, because they're worried about the funnel.
Yep.
And she puts it to the salesperson. What did you accomplish? Was it worth it? And that was something that I started taking on. And we were going to shows, especially with Boundless, we were going to shows like for open source community, because that was a big part of our stuff. Open source means nobody pays for it. And we were getting high conversions from there. When I did the work for Mapbox, that was a community that we supported pretty heavily. And we were able to close $1 million in government business in under 6 months. Because we were doing the anecdotal. We were getting the feedback from the salespeople. We were getting feedback from the audience. This isn't net promoter score. Right. This isn't leading feedback. This is like honest answers. That show sucked. They picked a bad venue. The timing was off. Like, you get those real numbers. You get the stuff like the coffee was horrible. It's like, okay, that's fine. I'll throw a can of Folgers crystals into your luggage. What do you need on that front? We're talking about the business case of it. But this is where, like, we're all failing, is this siloing, this focusing on stuff that is contributory. You know, you have this anecdotal and who you're listening to. And that's just a, like, you're not establishing metrics that are, that make sense.
Yeah.
And the silo is unhealthy. And that's, again, where we get into product hates engineering.
Yeah.
Marketing hates product. Sales hates marketing. Yeah.
A huge thing, a phrase that our team loves. We're always like, why does that matter? Why does that matter? And why does that matter? You know, it's just constantly like, why does that matter? When we're talking to individuals and they're going down this rabbit hole of shooting the shit with people on discovery or talking about their product. Like, why does that matter to them? I'm surprised that companies do so well with just how poorly we are doing. And I think to your point, it's like awesome products that are out there. But eventually, as tech continues, it's going to continue to evolve. We're at this intersection of rapid speed to market, right? It's speed to market. But at some point, it's not your product. Right? There's 10 others out there like it. And this churn and burn on the front end from sales, like, what is that tipping point?
Okay. So then, like, going into that, what's the switch that you see happening? There's low code, no code, AI, code validation, agent building now. Like, everybody wants to build a category. My favorite CEO statement when I go and ask them questions about the product and what they do and how the sales motion is going to work or PLG as a sales motion is going to work. We have no competitors.
And you're like, yet, or do you?
Cool. Cool. That's fine. Now you have two big problems. You're creating a category. Right. The biggest problem. And you probably purple lotion. You might have a little bit of blue, but it's mostly red, bud. Sorry.
This is the part that we've arrived to that I think is so awesome, is that individuals have so much to offer and are so diverse and have this like subject matter knowledge, or like yourself, kind of a savant of many things. Like you said, jack of a lot, able to work, but still working on passion projects as well. Blending that all together, because bringing that to an organization carries a lot of value and weight.
You took my heart. Yeah. But I would say it's been more of like hopping from life raft to life raft than bundling sticks to build that next island. No, and that's something that I hope people start changing and seeing. It's something that I hope organizations stop fearing, that remote work means that people are going to have J1s and J2s and pursue overemployed. People should be pursuing side hustles. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't like the word hustle. Yeah. The cancel culture I want is cancel hustle culture. But you're not going to have perspective if you're living in an echo chamber of your job. Yep. You're not going to bring in, we always talk about experience. People hire on competency. Have you done this job before, right? And did you do it well? It's the worst thing to hire somebody on. Then you have the other aspect of it, is do I think they can do the job and do I like them? And somewhere it falls in between the two. But both of those are bad. It's interesting. It's a bell curve. There we go. They're both low, but there's a middle that's pretty high. One thing that I would like to warn people about is don't convert your hobby into a job, because then it becomes a job. Don't convert friends and family into employees or business partners, because from there forward, they're no longer friends and family. And that's the hard part. It's hard building out that scenario. So, there we go. Let's go back 30 minutes to what we were really going to talk about. Founder-led sales, entrepreneurship, solopreneurship, getting out there in the sink or swim. So salespeople, you want to do something on the side because you have a lot of free time? You really don't. I know you don't. But you want to do something on the side? Remember, you got to do the work too. We don't do paperwork. Salespeople don't do paperwork. Never have. That's why we get in trouble. That's why marketing doesn't like us.
That's why it's not in the CRM.
But then everybody else that thinks sales is disgusting and scary and hard? Well, number one, it is all three of those things, but it's a lot of good things too. Don't forget, when you're doing the work, you also have to be selling, because then you get into this weird tied situation where you will starve for months. And guess what? It's harder to sell when you're starving than it is when you're working. And you compare it to anything. Like, you can be single forever, yeah, and then you're dating somebody that you actually like, and now everybody's at your doorstep. It's so weird. Or you have a job that you're totally in love with, and now recruiters are calling you. But it's also because you're putting out a certain energy. Those ones, it is because you're putting out a certain energy. For the rest of the time, like, just remember, if you're going to do it all, you got to do it all. And it sucks. And it's fun. And it's addictive.
And then you layer in some kids, and you're not sleeping, and then you're trying to exercise because you're aging and eat healthy and maybe take a vacation that isn't actually a vacation. It's just parenting in a different location. And yeah, it's a lot of balls to juggle.
So I guess you hit on the third one that I still miss today, self-care. Self-care. Because you're not any good to anybody unless you're good to yourself, period.
Yeah.
So yeah, how's your journey going? How much fun are you having? How much misery are you having? I'm going to turn the tables here, because I can tell you all my stories, but I'm always curious. Like, you're going to quit?
No. And actually, somebody asked me that a couple of weeks ago when I said, this is tough. Building your own pipeline as an entrepreneur when you're trying to educate. Sales training is tough to sell because somebody has to understand that they have a problem and that they're willing to change and that they're willing to change to you. And as individuals, we don't like to admit we have a problem or that we need help. So as a VP of sales, a CRO, the same is the case. A lot of times my entry is an IC and then them becoming a champion or sharing information. And a lot of the information that comes back is, I don't want to work on that. Like, nah, my strategy's good. We're working out the kinks. Yet we see win rates below 10%, decline in sales, discount. One of the companies that I'm talking to, they discount 100% of the time. Interesting. Okay. 100% of the time at 50%.
Is that the pricing model? I have yet to really encounter an organization that has ever sold at list.
Well, it begs a whole nother question, right? Why are we discounting? Why are salespeople doing that? What questions are they asking? Do they know what problems they're solving? I mean, the list goes on and on. And it's been very eye-opening. There's absolutely no methodology, no framework, no established processes, no training, no enablement. And they're slinging new products in order to keep that funnel moving. And that's what they're looking at the health of the organization on. So it's definitely been frustrating.
Velocity.
Yes, the velocity. It's definitely been frustrating to compete with a lot of noise out there. As an entrepreneur, what I found is that aligning with sales growth, the company, while there's really only like three employees plus some fractional talent, it has been an amazing place for continued mentorship and growth and business development. So every week they pour into me. I feel like I'm a W-2 employee without being a W-2 employee. I get coaching and the feedback. And then with the new partners who are coming on, I'm able to see their learning journey. So it's this amazing blend of being an entrepreneur, but not sitting here by myself all day and having team interaction. And I would say that the first part of my entrepreneurial journey, I didn't know if I could do it because I'm pretty much I'm an extroverted introvert. And I loved going into the office because I liked the energy from other people. And when I don't have that sitting behind my desk all day, if I don't have calls, I'm not interacting with people, it's a tough thing to say, oh, let's do this again tomorrow. And like you said, you go months and months without revenue because you're iterating and like, okay, now I don't want to work with individuals. I'm looking at companies. Now I'm just looking at this industry. They have this problem. So you're constantly second guessing yourself. But no, I won't give up because I've bet on myself.
There you go. It's a good bet.
And I've seen the freedom, the flexibility, the upside versus a W-2 employee of, why are you wearing that? Why did this person do that? Can you contact them? Copy me on this email.
You've still got all that. That's not going away. But now you have the addition of people ask you where you work, and you say you're self-employed.
Right, and they're like...
And they look at you like you're unemployed.
Oh, so you're unemployed.
Yep. Or, you know, my favorite is people ask you all types of favors. Can you run errands for me? You're not doing anything today. You're not busy.
I think mine is more so, can I have your time? Can you help me with this? Can you help me build out my LinkedIn? That's the biggest one. Can you just give me some pointers? Do you have 30 minutes where you could just help me with this? So tell us as we wrap up here, I'd love to know if you could sum up like one myth going into that you want to bust. What would it be?
Ooh, a myth. A myth, something that people believe that isn't true, yes. That you get more closes with more prospects.
Mm-hmm. The old TOF. Yes. More. Mm-hmm. More is not more.
It's more annoying. Oh, it is. And you're starting to see it with...
This is true.
Without the DMARC problems and going to spam and everything else, like, we're going to go back to the old rules and the old ways of playing.
Get those beepers
smart
out.
Smart marketing. Mm-hmm.
Meeting at the payphone. You wonder if we'll see payphones pop up again. Everything old is new again. Oh.
Actually, I have an album online called Feral Phones, where with all my travels I take pictures of payphones.
Ooh, that's getting harder
still,
to find, though.
Still function. That's the rules that they have to still
that's
function.
Getting,
I have a different library.
That's getting harder to find, I bet.
Depends where you go. It's just like you think video rental stores don't exist anymore, but they do. We'll stay out of social impact. We'll stay out of that altogether. But that's a whole channel I can go down as far as.
All right. Well.
Money. Bye. Thank
awesome.
You. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's been such a pleasure just to hear from someone, right, at this juncture of entrepreneurship, W-2, head of marketing, in sales, understands it all and continues through all the muck and the mud, and you're building. All right, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, Peter. Catch him on LinkedIn, putting out some spicy content, not afraid to challenge others in the comment section. But we'll definitely not respond to your DM if it sucks, and we'll get moved to the other inbox. So no trolling, but Peter's up to great things, and always great to see your savantness, I will say,